I've never made it with moderation. Written by Trixery. Read by Opal Song. Fandom, Star Wars. Rating, mature. Relationships, Cody Obi-Wan and the 212th Attack Battalion Obi-Wan. Also tagged for Fallen Jedi Obi-Wan Kenobi. Obi-Wan Kenobi needs a hug. Protective Cody. Protective Obi-Wan Kenobi. Kid Fic, kinda. Young Bad Batch. Hurt Comfort. Kaminoans being assholes. Flashbacks. Mutual pining. Implied or referenced child abuse. Medical trauma. Ableism. Polyamory. In which Obi-Wan decides, hey, fuck this actually, and saunters vaguely downwards. Recorded for Marianas for ITPE 2023.
Want me to love you in moderation? Do I look moderate to you? Sip it slowly and pay attention. I just have to see it through. You got me looking for validation. Passion's new. Want me to love you in moderation? Well, who'd you think you're talking to?
Chapter 1. Grievous's assault on Kamino was difficult for everyone, Jedi and clones alike. For the Jedi, it was a callous attack against the vulnerable young clones, not yet soldiers, not yet combatants, but rather children. For the clones, it was a strike against their home. Perhaps, Obi-Wan thinks, with some consideration, not a happy home, but a home nonetheless. A home where their younger brothers reside, many of them still defenseless. That would shake anyone. But possibly no one has taken the attack quite as hard as Cody. Obi-Wan had been on Ryloth when Waxer and Boyle had rescued the young Twi'lek girl, Numa. The same child who now adorns their helmets. He'd seen their care for her, felt their immediate and utter devotion in the Force. It had shone so brightly, it was wholly consuming. Obi-Wan could have powered entire solar systems with the gravity of their love. It was a worthwhile reminder for a Jedi. Attachment is dangerous. The Jedi must love in moderation, love all life equally. With power such as theirs, each act must prioritize the greater good, lest they risk sacrificing the many for the few. Watching Numa grip Waxer and Boyle's hands in each of hers, calling them Nara, and feeling their overwhelming desire to guard, protect, cherish, Obi-Wan had needed to ruthlessly crush the answering ache it opened up in his chest. It has always been his greatest failing as a Jedi. Attachment. He'd always had to work so very hard to temper his attachments. He'd never come so close to falling as he had when he'd loved Satine. Loved her with everything in him. And known that if she had only asked, he'd have surrendered everything he'd ever wanted just to stay at her side. Or when he'd lost Qui-Gon. Force. A decade and half a dozen mind healers since, and Obi-Wan still aches for Qui-Gon. He'll still sometimes turn a corner and expect his master to be there, waiting with a private half-smile, towering over everyone in the vicinity. And the absence of him kicks Obi-Wan straight in the chest. Shamefully, his struggles with attachment had continued throughout his time as Anakin's teacher. But at least then he'd had the support of his fellow Jedi Knights, the Temple Mind Healers, and the Masters. Those same resources are inaccessible to him now. War has spread all of the Jedi thin. And truthfully, Obi-Wan has been struggling since the start of it. It is impossible to work and live and fight alongside someone. Impossible to lay down your life for them and find that they are willing to do the same. Impossible to mourn as one and not love them. So yes, Obi-Wan loves his men. He loves every single one of them so dearly. Sometimes he loves them so dearly that he thinks it might rip him apart. As the days of the war drag on, the losses growing ever steeper and the triumphs ever more brilliant, he finds it harder and harder to love them in moderation, to love them as a Jedi should. Most days, it is a battle of inches, measured in increments thin as fingernails. It is a battle that Obi-Wan must continue to fight nonetheless. The troopers have no such compunctions, and it makes it all the much harder. The clones truly own nothing but their devotion to one another. They cling to their attachments tightly, painting the names of their most cherished brothers on the insides of their chest plates, on the backs of their vambraces, kept close, always. They love with ferocity, attachment. And Obi-Wan knows that some of his men carry his name inside their armor. The battle of inches shrinks to centimeters with each passing day. Obi-Wan has not seen Cody since the Negotiator was redirected to Kamino to assist in the battle against Grievous's forces. He joined the fray on his own almost as soon as they hit Atmo. No, it isn't until much, much later that he finds Cody again. If the sound of sobbing wasn't enough to draw him in, the sheer strength of panic and desperation being projected certainly would be. He really had just been wandering aimlessly. The battle had concluded hours ago, Kamino well into its night cycle, and all that remains to be done are cleanup operations and the recovery of casualties. Obi-Wan was only intending to take a momentary break from the effort, seeking out a quieter portion of the cloning facility, near deserted and largely untouched by the fighting, when he'd felt the first ice-cold spray of desperate panic against his shields. His first thought is that the fighting had reached this area after all, and that someone, possibly a youngling by the shape of their distress, has been injured and alone this whole time, crying out for help with no one around to hear. Obi-Wan picks up the pace, rushing through the blank white walls, drawing nearer and nearer to the sound. So driven is he by his fear of the worst. He's seen far too many young corpses today, and all with the same face. The same face he doesn't even notice. Distressed young presence is not alone until he's already opened the door. Cody is crouched on the ground, his upper armor discarded, a child folded tightly into his arms. The boy is small, tiny even, strangely thin for a Fett clone that age, although Obi-Wan admits that he doesn't have much experience with the younger clones. The boy is sobbing in great, heaving breaths, The utterly ruined and plainly hysterical kind of crying that is largely unique to children. In an instant, Cody's eyes snap to Obi-Wan's own. They stare at each other for a moment that stretches into an eternity. Cody's grip imperceptibly tightens around the boy, his cheek pressed flush to the side of the child's head, and the blatantly protective display, protective against Obi-Wan, hits him like a physical blow. Whatever this is, Cody does not trust him with it. Obi-Wan swallows, steps further into the room, an empty classroom of some sort, and closes the door after himself. Very few lights are on, but now that he's looking more clearly, looking beyond his shock, Obi-Wan realizes that the child's hair is a pale, silvery white, a fine dandelion fuzz. Odessi, Cody is murmuring, quiet, his eyes never leaving Obi-Wan's. There's a challenge in them. Even though the soothing cadence of his voice never stops, he is projecting so strongly into the Force that it's like a physical siren. I will not be moved. You're all right. I've got you. Cody continues as the boy sobs, pressing ever forward as if he could crawl inside Cody's chest if he just tried hard enough. But we won't be. The child hiccups. Cody closes his eyes, brief, like the words are a physical blow. They cause acute pain, rippling around his Force signature as surely as a blaster wound would. Obi-Wan takes a breath, centers himself and his intent, and projects to Cody. How can I help? His commander's eyes snap open at once, wide with shock. And Obi-Wan had always thought, that his bond with Cody was strong, that they trusted one another implicitly. But gods, if Cody truly believes that Obi-Wan would take a sobbing child from his arms, if he believed it enough to react with such surprise to Obi-Wan's genuine desire to help, he has been so terribly wrong. The thought that there's anything Cody would not trust him with, it hurts. Crosshair, breathe. Cody soothes, one hand rubbing slow circles against the boy's, Crosshair's, back, the other holding him firm to his chest. Udesi, Vodika, I've got you. It's going to be okay. Orihat. You can't, the boy shouts, shoving ineffectually at Cody's chest. He doesn't let the boy go very far at all. You can't promise that we'll be okay because we won't be when you leave. And then he stops altogether, the boy realizing that Obi-Wan is here. His fear is immediate and powerful, sour in the Force. Utterly silent, the boy cuts himself off and freezes, his expression going carefully blank all at once, even as tears continue to slip down his face. Obi-Wan realizes he's looming and slowly crouches as Cody has. He offers a tentative smile, but Crosshair isn't even looking at him. His eyes are fixed straight at the floor, unseeing. Feeling helpless and lost, Obi-Wan glances at Cody, who catches his gaze and holds it as easily as he always has. He's grim-faced, upset, afraid. It's all right, Cross, Cody says, soft. This is my general, Nergeti Vodika. Do you remember what I told you about my general? Gar Morutik. But wherever Crosshair is, it's far away from here. A carefully still face, eyes locked on nothing discernible, holding himself so tensely that Obi-Wan is afraid he'll hurt himself. The child is clearly disassociating, and it's just as clearly Obi-Wan's fault. With a soft sigh, Cody carefully rearranges the boy in his arms, guiding Crosshair to place his arms around Cody and rest his head on Cody's shoulder. he murmurs quiet assurances through the process. A combination of bastardized Mandoa and Basic that Obi-Wan has come to recognize as the clone's own sort of dialect. Most of it is said too quietly for him to hear. He catches the important pieces, though. I'm here. You're safe. I'll keep you all safe. Rest. Cody, Obi-Wan says softly once he's stood, crosshair gathered carefully in his arms. He makes a subtle hand motion, a sway of the fingers, the same signal they've used to indicate troopers that might need an extra nudge through the Force to sleep after a great trauma or in times of stress. There's very little he can offer, not without knowing more, but this, at least, is simple. Cody swallows. With a sharp nod, he presses a kiss to the side of the boy's head. I'll be here when you wake up, Orihat. It is the work of a moment to nudge the already overexhausted child into sleep. As Crosshair settles fully in Cody's grasp, no longer resisting with tense, locked-up muscles, Cody sags too, as if invisible strings have been cut. Obi-Wan aches to hold him, but this is not a boundary he can cross without consequences. He settles for a gentle touch to the arm and watches impossibly tired eyes flicker up to meet his own. How can I help? Obi-Wan asks, softly still, even though there's no reason for the quiet. It's quite difficult to rouse someone so deeply asleep. Cody blows out a breath, more of a hiss than anything. I don't know, he admits. They lost someone today. Someone important. They? After Geonosis, Cody begins, staring sightless at something far, far away. The Kaminoans started experimenting with more dramatic enhancements. Increased strength, sensory, perception, memory, sight. Most weren't successful, but... Obi-Wan swallows and stares down at shock white hair. Now that he's looking for it, the markers of a Fett clone are all there. The same skin tone, the same bone structure, albeit soft with young age. The same eyes. It's all there. But some were, he concludes. Yeah. There's a ragged edge to Cody's voice, something that Obi-Wan can't say he's ever heard before. Some were. Four were, and they aren't. A breath, like he's shoring up defenses, and Cody continues. They aren't popular with the Kaminoans. Only a handful supported the project to begin with. And they're different. They can't be trained the same way, and some of the other cadets are unkind to them. Difference isn't... It isn't easy on Kamino. And the enhancements weren't without cost. Cody, some of the Kaminoans don't think they're worth it. A laugh, devoid of all humor. Most don't think they're worth it. Most are cruel. But I didn't have to worry that one day I'd come back and they wouldn't be here, because 99 was here. He was the first of us to be noticeably different. Different with no obvious utility. And survive. And with only those words, Obi-Wan knows immediately who Cody is talking about. He'd come across some of Anakin's arcs, Fives and Echo, in the early hours after the battle. He'd seen the body they carried with them, reverently. He'd felt their grief and ached for their loss. Force, he whispers. 99 looked out for them. Cody. Obi-Wan ducks his head, searching for his commander's eyes. He shifts his grip, squeezing, grounding. Cody, what is Crosshair afraid of? Survive, he had said, And Obi-Wan has a horrible feeling that Cody did not simply mean surviving his physical ailments. Cody swallows. The Force rolls with tension, with struggle. We don't talk about it. Cody, he pleads, let me help. Obi-Wan has seen so many bodies today, so many of them painfully young, too young, so young. Crosshair is immunocompromised, Cody says, voice shaking with a subtle thread of tension that rings as loud and clear as a bell to Obi-Wan's ears. Hunter gets migraines, these awful, debilitating things, and he'll just collapse. Wrecker has chronic pain because of how quickly his body grows. Tech has behavioral problems, tics he can't control, and poor eyesight. There's nothing but agony, complete and utter agony in Cody's eyes when, finally, he meets Obi-Wan's stare and says, as ice cold as the depths of the Kamino in ocean, Rex's entire batch was decommissioned because they came out blonde. The long necks don't need an excuse. They never have. Oh, gods. Obi-Wan takes a staggering step back. Does decommissioning mean what I think it means? He manages after a long moment. He does not want to know. He has to know. Obi-Wan's voice is utterly foreign to his own ears. It is the voice of a different man, of someone that stumbled into a nightmare where children that deviate from a rigid norm are put down like defective products. Please, please let me be wrong. Yeah, Cody whispers, a terrible confession that cuts Obi-Wan to ribbons. It does. He'd known how some of the men are with younglings. Known from Waxer and Boyle how sharply those attachments can form with little ones. Sith hells, the men were raised to be protective. So much so that Obi-Wan has often wondered if their protective drive was not written into their very atoms, some intrinsic part of their DNA. It wasn't something Obi-Wan had ever questioned. It simply was. The older clones often assumed a more parental role around the younger generations. He thought he had understood the scope of it. He hadn't understood a thing. Not until Kamino. They hold onto children tight as they can, because if they don't, well, every single clone knows personally what it is to lose a youngling. Cody escorts him to another wing, down another winding set of identical bleach-white halls, empty save for them. They don't speak as they walk. Obi-Wan can't account for what may happen if he were to open his mouth. Crosshair remains asleep in Cody's arms as they travel, leaving Obi-Wan to carry the discarded pieces of his upper armor. He very carefully does not glance at the list of names painted on the inside of his chest piece. Plausible deniability is important. Eventually, they reach a wide door, at which Cody pauses. He shoots Obi-Wan a wince and murmurs, quiet. They can be a lot. Obi-Wan practically raised Anakin. He is very much prepared for children that are a lot. And Cody needs him. These children need him. He gives Cody what he hopes is a reassuring smile. Before Cody can move for the door's control pad, it slides open from the inside, revealing a cadet-sized clone with hair just barely long enough to tuck behind his ears, curling stubbornly underneath his earlobes. There's something wild in his eyes, something frantic in his Force signature. Cody! the boy exclaims, all relief. You found him. Hunter, Cody says, smiling at the boy with such fondness that it makes Obi-Wan ache deep in his chest. All this time, Cody has had siblings in danger, little ones that he cares so, so deeply for, and Obi-Wan had never known. He'd never known how much the clones have to lose, how much they have to fear. Hunter's eyes flit nervously to Obi-Wan. He quickly snaps to attention, a regulation tight salute. The sight of a child so young snapping to military attention fills him with a rising nausea. General, the child says, voice unwavering, but something undeniably nervous about him in the Force. A child so small has not called Obi-Wan General in many, many years. It feels like a lifetime ago. It feels like a stab wound. Obi-Wan crouches to meet Hunter's eyes directly. Hello, Hunter. It's nice to meet you. He does his best to smile, even as his heart aches. There's no need for ranks. Hunter's dark eyes dart quick to Cody's, and back again, wary. What do I call you then, sir? He asks, frowning far too seriously for a boy so young. You can call me whatever you'd like, Obi-Wan promises, although he knows this too wary boy is likely to not believe him. Are the others inside? Yeah, Hunter confirms, still eyeing Obi-Wan with no small amount of confusion. But Wrecker's having a bad day. They quietly follow Hunter back into the room, Cody holding one of the boy's hands. He seems younger than Crosshair in the Force, if not by much. The more Obi-Wan sees of this space, the more his heart sinks. It does not appear to be any sort of standard bunk room or nursery. Instead, it appears to be a medical facility. Every bed they pass is a med bed, large enough to fit three or more children comfortably shoulder to shoulder. Various equipment hangs from wall mounts, from blood pressure sensors to IV hookups, to full scanners. There's no privacy to be found, not a single curtain to pull between the beds, and an abandoned silver tray of needles and syringes idles in the corner as if shoved there and subsequently ignored. One of the med beds has been pushed into the far back corner of the room, the headboard and a single side flush against the wall. A slightly more defensible position, Obi-Wan notes. This is the only bed that is occupied. Two boys, one large and one smaller, are pressed close together. The larger of the two is closer to the wall, laying with his back flush against it, his red-rimmed eyes clenched tightly closed. Pain bleeds off his Force signature freely. The smaller boy sits with his back propped against the head of the bed, a data pad balanced on his knees. The faint blue light of the pad reflects in the lenses of his goggles. He scrolls every so often with his free hand, the other clasped tightly in his brother's. As they approach, the boy in the goggles, Tech, Obi-Wan assumes, from Cody's description, glances up at them, expression openly thoughtful. Hunter says, relief evident in his voice, Cody found Crosshair, and releases Cody's hand to scramble up onto the end of the bed, back to the wall, placing the larger boy's feet gently in his lap. Cross is back? The larger boy slurs, cracking one eye open, searching. He must be Wrecker by the process of elimination. Hey, Vodika, Cody murmurs, so very soft, and gently lowers the sleeping Crosshair down next to Tech, who obediently shuffles over to make space. Cody then leans over the bed to place a hand on the side of Wrecker's head, gently. "You are Jedi General Obi-Wan Kenobi," Tech announces, peering around Cody. Obi-Wan smiles. "Yes, I am. And you are Tech?" Cody eases back on his heels, simply watching, and something terribly fragile and warm blooms through him in the Force. Obi-Wan struggles to name it anything but hope. Tech blinks, surprised, and nods. "How did you know?" The full weight of the boy's attention is staggering. Obi-Wan eases himself down onto the abandoned bed across from the one housing the four boys. "Cody told me about you," he offers. It is, technically, truthful. They don't need to know that said telling only happened minutes ago, nor that even then it only occurred because Obi-Wan went sniffing around where he wasn't wanted. Any other words are delayed as a spike of pain shudders through the Force. Wrecker flinches, curling into himself and his brother, stifling a sound like a sob. Tech and Hunter stiffen, both immediately diving over their brother to comfort and hush in turn, something awfully desperate about it. Cody is much the same, reaching over the tangled pile of children again, soothing. "Udesi Rekika." It's like watching Ghost Company close ranks over a perceived threat. It's natural, instinctive. One of their own is hurting and vulnerable, and Obi-Wan is the outsider in this room, the unknown variable. He knows this logically. It does not mitigate the shock of it. "Hurts," Wrecker sobs, teeth clenched, forehead pressed tight into Tech's side. It's easy, looking at their four signatures, to identify Tech and Wrecker as the youngest of the bunch. It's easy, too, to feel the instinctive way Tech responds to his brother's pain, little hands knowing where to fall in order to best soothe invisible hurts. "They're babies," Obi-Wan thinks, shattered completely by the knowledge. "They're children, and they're so practiced in protection, in a sort of caretaking that no child should have to learn." And Cody, too, who moves among them like a creche master moves among the little ones in their care, with complete and utter belonging, with practice, with care. Their pain cuts him deeply. And Obi-Wan was not trusted with these hurts. For all that he... Obi-Wan stands again, moving carefully closer to the bed. He touches Cody's shoulder briefly, gently. They've always been able to communicate with a baffling amount of ease. Even since their earliest days together, there's always been some sort of intrinsic nonverbal connection between them. A turn of the head here, a flicker of the eyes, a look, matched effortlessly over a battlefield. Understanding without words needing to be spoken. Here is no different. After a moment, Cody swallows. "Rekika," he murmurs. "The general is going to try and help, okay?" Obi-Wan squeezes his shoulder briefly and says, quietly, "Just Obi-Wan, please." Carefully, with Hunter and Tech's eyes drilling into him, Obi-Wan helps Cody shift Crosshair, still deeply sleeping, into his lap. Tech is small enough that, once Crosshair has been moved, Obi-Wan can easily perch at the edge of the bed and reach for Wrecker. He brushes a careful touch across the boy's sweat-damp face, hyper-aware of the eyes on him. He's done this more times than he can count. Force healing was never a specialty of his, but transferring another's pain to himself, shouldering just a bit of it, just enough to bleed off into the Force, providing the suffering relief, this is a skill he'd learned early, on the blood-soaked dirt of Melida Dawn. It is not one Obi-Wan has ever allowed himself to forget. Wrecker's every muscle is alight with an ache so acute it leaves Obi-Wan briefly breathless. He's far too old now to quite remember his own growing pains, but he knows they were nothing like this. This is more akin to getting hit by a moving speeder. This feels like going hand to hand with Grievous for a round or two. But Obi-Wan is practiced with pain. He bears it with comparative ease and releases what he can, rubbing absent circles across damp skin. All at once, Wrecker sags against the bed with a sound of pure animal relief. "Oh," he exhales, bleary and surprised. "Wrecker?" Hunter asks, concerned. "It's gone," he murmurs, eyes already drooping with exhaustion. "It's better." Obi-Wan can't hardly blame him. It's been quite a day for all of them, and there's clearly been a heavy emotional toll taken on these children as well. "They've lost someone," Cody had said. "Their grief is a near tangible thing." Wrecker fumbles, catching Obi-Wan gently by the wrist as he tries to pull away. "Rest now," Obi-Wan suggests. "It's all right. We can do that as many times as you need." The boy, staring up at him with tear-swollen eyes, is brimming over with wonder and gratitude. He is so, so young. Littler, even, than Anakin was when he fell into Obi-Wan's care. Perhaps 7, maybe 8, as the clones would measure these things. About 3 or 4 years standard. "Thank you," Wrecker murmurs, already drifting off. Tech reaches over him, extracting something carefully from under his side and against the wall. It's a plush toy, a dark Nuna with red headtails and button eyes. He carefully places the plush between Wrecker's sleep black's arms before settling back down at his brother's side. Noticing Obi-Wan's gaze, Hunter explains hastily, as if he expects Obi-Wan to protest. "Wrecker needs Lula to sleep." "Of course," Obi-Wan soothes. Hunter eyes him with suspicion. "Force."
"How'd you do it?"
Tech asks.
"Was it the Force?"
"Yes," he says, grateful for the distraction. He meets Cody's eyes briefly. There's something like relief in them. Something hurt, too. "It's a force technique for alleviating others' pain," Obi-Wan explains.
"How does it work?"
"Tech," Hunter interjects, a warning. "It's all right," Obi-Wan offers him what he hopes is a relieving smile. "I don't mind, although I'm afraid it would be a bit hard to explain without being force-sensitive yourself." With a frown, Tech asks,
"Why?"
"Well, think of the Force as an additional sense, like sight or hearing. You can imagine it'd be fairly difficult to explain the color blue to someone born blind, or describe a piece of music to someone born deaf." Obi-Wan explains, "It's difficult to describe what, to me, is an intrinsic part of the world and how I move in it, to someone that does not have those same senses." After a thoughtful pause, Tech replies,
"Difficult doesn't mean impossible."
Obi-Wan can't help but smile. "Clever." "No, of course not. I suppose I could always give it a shot." They talk for long enough that Hunter eventually drifts off, Cody gently intervening to lay the boy out more comfortably when he drops off. Even as Tech wavers with clear exhaustion, and Obi-Wan can't blame him, they've all had a difficult day. He persists in asking questions, all startlingly insightful and challenging. Obi-Wan has not had such in-depth discussions of Force theory since his days as a knight. After the third time Tech yawns with enough power to pop his jaw, Obi-Wan draws their discussion to a close. "Why don't you get some sleep? We can continue talking in the morning if you'd like."
"Are you sure?"
Tech asks. It's clear that he doesn't quite believe him. "I promise," Obi-Wan says. "I'll even see if I can find you some of those readings I was talking about. I'm sure digital copies exist somewhere on the net." Tech's eyes sparkle behind the slightly tinted lenses of his goggles. It makes something kick in Obi-Wan's chest. "Sleep," Cody encourages, leaning forward to give Tech a gentle Keldaba. "I'll be here when you wake up."
"Cody,"
Tech asks, catching him by the wrist,
"what will happen to 99?
Cody sucks in a breath, shallow, through his clenched teeth. Obi-Wan excuses himself from this conversation, standing and walking to the other side of the room, over by the lab counter where the centrifuge and other equipment lives. However, the space is not large, and any perceived privacy is just that. Perceived. "Some of Rex's arcs were with him when he marched on. They've got him," Cody offers. It's a pale comfort.
"There was chatter of an autopsy over the Kaminoans' comm frequency,"
Tech reveals.
"I don't think he would want that. He should be cremated with the others."
A soft sound as Cody no doubt shifts on the med bed, most likely pulling Tech into an embrace. Obi-Wan doesn't turn to look. It isn't his place. His chest aches. "I'll see what I can do," Cody murmurs. "Please get some rest. I'm not going anywhere." "But you will," Cody thinks, and hates himself viciously for it. "And I'll be the one to take you, because I am your general and you are my commander." He had never known what his men left behind. They end up sitting on the floor just outside the room where the so-called Bad Batch are housed. The floors are just as hard and unforgiving as they look, the walls just as cold. They rest there in weighty silence for long moments, Obi-Wan deep in thought, Cody scrolling through his calm. Obi-Wan believes that he will most likely be the one to break the silence, although he has no clue as to what he might say. But it is Cody who surprises him once again. "I'm sorry," he says, abrupt as a blaster shot. Obi-Wan's not sure he's ever heard Cody apologize to him before, and he can't even fathom what he's apologizing for.
"No, dear, it's all right,"
jumps out of his mouth without any conscious input. But he knows, as soon as he's said it, that it's true. Perhaps Cody is apologizing for keeping this from him, both the boys and, well, decommissioning. "There's no need for apology. I understand." Cody turns to face him, expression pinched. "Nope, there is. I'm sorry that I never said anything. I trust you, sir. I really do. All of us do. But we've always had to be so careful about these things. It isn't something any one of us thinks about hiding. It just is." "It shouldn't have to be," Obi-Wan thinks. "I'm so sorry that this was allowed to continue for so long." He swallows. "Cody," he tries, and finds himself reaching out, helpless not to. He brushes a careful touch to his commander's arm, fingers clasped as gentle as he can manage on the exposed stretch of blacks between the separate plates of his armor. Obi-Wan tries, desperately, to put aside the small sound that Cody makes. I will do everything in my power to make sure that this practice stops immediately. Their paltry words in the face of such a horror. Children culled for their differences. He thinks of the haunted quality some of his men carry, of the shadows that linger in their eyes. Obi-Wan had thought those shadows were cast by the never-ending horrors of war. Maybe he was wrong. Maybe the source of the shade began far, far earlier than that. He can't stomach the thought. "Sir," Cody says, stutteringly. Nothing else follows. "I want to help," he affirms. "Please let me try." "All right," he says, eventually. And there is such impossible emotion in his eyes. Obi-Wan must look away, can only look away, lest he do something unwise with the twisting in his gut. Obi-Wan sets off to find Master T almost immediately, leaving Cody with the promise to delegate as much of the relief efforts to the rest of the 212th and 501st Command. Cody deserves some time with his little brothers, and they deserve the time with him, too. He finds her in the heart of the recovery effort, using the Force to aid troopers in clearing away rubble from out of a hangar. Icy wind and rain blows in through the open, demolished, rather, bay doors, swirling in through the dark of night, invisibly before catching the floodlights and falling like white blaster fire. Over the din of the ocean below, the howling wind and the calls of the troopers, it is rather difficult to pull Master T aside. Eventually, Obi-Wan manages, and they make their hurried leave. The Togruta Jedi turns to him, a question on her lips, before Obi-Wan projects in the Force. "Not here. Is there somewhere more private we can go?" Expression serious, no doubt reading some of his grim intent in the Force, Master T briskly leads him down the winding, identical paths of Tipoca towards her quarters. It takes a small eternity, winding through and around the havoc that the battle has wreaked. They stop many times to assist with various things. Kamino is not as vibrant in the Force as it usually manages to be. Clinical, yes, but inevitably full of the sheer life of thousands upon thousands of sentients living together, growing together, being together. Now there is a hush, both literal and metaphorical. The Force has gone pale with pain and mourning. Obi-Wan has walked these halls in an era that seems to be more than a lifetime ago. Gossip was everywhere, the halls abuzz with the clones' chatter and curiosity at the sight of him. Troopers, he's come to learn, are notorious gossips. Now, the tune these halls hum is a funeral procession. Master T's quarters are predictably sparse. Obi-Wan has long since learned that Qui-Gon was a bit of an aberration for a Jedi. His quarters were always teeming with houseplants. There is little difference between Master T's quarters and Jango Fett's quarters, which Obi-Wan had visited once upon a time. It lends itself to a sense of déjà vu. "You seem unsettled, Master Kenobi," she says, with a gesture for Obi-Wan to take a seat on one of her couches. "I confess that I am, Master T. I have recently learned something rather disturbing, and I wanted to bring it to your attention immediately," he explains. Part of Obi-Wan already feels more settled for being in another Jedi's presence. Surely, together they can manage to do something. "What do you know of decommissioning?" Master T says, a single, short sound that Obi-Wan cannot truly parse. "I've long fought the Kaminoans on this practice, to no avail." Balks despite himself. "What do you mean, to no avail?" "We are not able to outright demand that the practice be stopped altogether," she explains, calm and collected. "The Kaminoans see it as a matter of good business practice, and any attempts to interfere with this reflect poorly on the Republic at large. From their perspective, we are removing their ability to exercise good discretion over their product. It is an overstep, one we simply cannot afford if we wish to stay on Kamino in any capacity. You cannot be serious, Master T. Captain Rex of the 501st was nearly decommissioned for his hair color, Obi-Wan stresses. It is not as if we have no say. I have been able to intervene on behalf of many of the clones in my time here, she replies, expression stern. I understand your distress. Truly, I do. There is not a day that goes by where I do not advocate for the clones to be seen as the individuals that they are. But the Jedi's position here is precarious. So precarious that we cannot prevent the culling of children. Master T frowns, her expression carved from stone. My work here allows the Order to advocate on behalf of all the clones that come through these halls. It is unfortunate, Master Kenobi, but if we were to truly fight Kamino on this, we risk everything we have been able to do for them. She reaches for him, gently taking his hands and squeezing. A motherly move. I know that it is difficult, but we must put aside our emotions in service of a greater good. Obi-Wan can only swallow, throat gone dry. We have neither the leverage nor backing to challenge the Kaminoans here. The Senate fought the appointment of a Jedi representative in any capacity, and without the possibility of a separatist attack, it is likely we would have been denied outright. She continues. How often do decommissionings occur? He asks, not as Obi-Wan, but as the negotiator. He has to put aside his emotions and continue this conversation. He simply can't have it any other way. At this, Shakti sighs. Her sweeping montrails bob as she, solemn, shakes her head. This is information I suspect is being censored from me. The capacity in which I am allowed to operate is that of training. There are many files which are barred to me. And this is an acceptable loss. The detached, clinical language makes his own skin crawl. He thinks, sharply, of Crosshair, and the way he had sobbed in Cody's arms. He thinks of Tech's bright-eyed wonder and cunning. However many clones, extinguished, for the safety of the rest. The war takes a cruel toll on all of us, she replies, somber, as if this is sufficient. We must put aside our emotions for the sake of the greater good. The rest of the conversation passes in a daze. Obi-Wan agrees to meditate on things, politely refusing Master T's invitation for a joint meditation. They speak about the recovery efforts, the lives lost in the battle, and what may be next for Grievous and Ventress. Obi-Wan drifts through it all. He's long ago mastered the art of appearing present for a conversation, when he is anything but. It's less than an hour until sunrise, or what counts for sunrise on Kamino, by the time he leaves her quarters. Master Kenobi, she calls, oddly soft. Her smile is gentle and kind when she offers, apropos of nothing. You have a big heart. Your troopers are lucky to have you. He scrapes out a polite nod for her before heading on his way. As the post-Ryloth debrief had drawn to a close, Waxer had lingered still. The coordination efforts with Mace's Lightning Squadron had the meeting running long, and most of the 212th Command were eager to leave. Even Cody was in a rush to hit the freshers and wash off that clinging Ryloth dust. But Waxer had stayed. He'd even waved Boyle ahead, telling him he'd catch up. Is everything all right, Waxer? Obi-Wan had asked. A small, rueful smile had crossed his face. He hadn't made any move to sit, so Obi-Wan remained standing as well. Did you know? Waxer began, uncharacteristically subdued. That all of us clones are made sterile? Obi-Wan had found it difficult to swallow around the lump that had rather suddenly occupied his throat. No, he offered, tentative. I did not. They say that it's for the sake of intellectual property and claim disputes. Our genetic material in its altered form is owned. It's theirs, legally. Any child of a clone would be, too. Or at least, that's what they told us, Waxer explained. He huffed out a sound that approximated a laugh. It just about crushed me when I found out. A half shrug. I'd always wanted to be a parent, have an Adika or two, and then I just... His voice catches. I saw Numa? There are boundaries that Obi-Wan has always been careful not to cross. There are lines that he has drawn for himself, marching orders for his battle of inches, and careful tactics. He'd pulled Waxer into a hug anyway. His lieutenant had gripped him tight, but not tight enough to bruise. It's the kind of man Waxer is. Gentle, even when he's hurting. What will happen to her? Is she going to be okay? Waxer had whispered, ragged and aching as Obi-Wan held onto him. She's with her family, Obi-Wan replied. He wondered, idly, if it was possible to bleed internally for the people you love. There's talk of stationing a battalion on Ryloth more permanently. She'll be all right. What if it's not enough? Obi-Wan hadn't had a satisfactory answer for that. He finds Cody exactly where he left him. He's fallen asleep, sitting upright, bucket on to disguise the slight lolling of his head. Obi-Wan can't be fooled by the trick. He can feel his commander sleeping lightly through the Force. How many times has Obi-Wan watched over this man, keeping an eye out to ensure his sleep is as peaceful as can be? How many times has Cody done the same for him? Maybe it's natural for clones. Maybe the sleeping vigils begin early out of fear that a brother will go missing, never to return in the night. Fuck, he curses softly. Unfortunately, it does not make him feel any better. More unfortunately, it wakes Cody, even as quiet as Obi-Wan was. Sir? There's no use for it. With a sigh, Obi-Wan joins him, sitting with his back against the wall. They're close enough to touch. He feels exhausted suddenly, exhausted in a way that 10 hours of battle can't quite accomplish. Just thoroughly, utterly drained. Politics, he manages, gesturing vaguely. I've been told that decommissioning is a matter of politics. It's quiet in this hall. When Cody removes his bucket, the faint hiss of the pressure seal is plainly audible. His eyes, when Obi-Wan turns to meet them, aren't anything but forgiving. You tried, Cody says. That's more than we usually get. Fuck. Obi-Wan scrubs a hand over his face, rough, aching in a thousand nameless ways. But I didn't try, he wants to protest. I asked and was told no. I asked and was told to check my attachments, to temper my emotions. Obi-Wan? He can count on one hand the number of times Cody has called him by his name, not his rank. Most of those instances were out of anger. When he'd done something or other that his commander deemed reckless enough for a full name chewing out. This is not anger. This is another beast entirely. Cody is still looking at him, still pulling at all these nameless hurts in his chest with nothing but his eyes. When he says, heartbreakingly soft, "Thank you." He stands and clips his bucket to his belt. Obi-Wan cannot fault him for his shaking hands. When Cody rises and keys open the door to the room at their backs, Obi-Wan does not follow. The door closes softly after him as Cody goes to his brothers. His brothers that Obi-Wan cannot protect. His brothers who might not be here when Cody returns next. Hunter and Crosshair and Tech and Wrecker. Rex, nearly, and the clones of his batch whose names Obi-Wan does not know. Countless more, no doubt. Who remembers their names? Does Shuck T? Obi-Wan's men, whose lives are defined by war. His men, whose childhoods are stolen, accelerated so that they might be brought to the battlefield sooner, so that they might die for the Republic they've never known. His men, who have hardly imagined an after for themselves. His men who have lost so much already. How many of his men have little brothers in danger? How many of them want children of their own? How many of them will die before Obi-Wan himself, whether it be by battle or by their accelerated aging? In the room at his back, perhaps Cody is taking one long look. Perhaps he is memorizing their faces or the way they lay tangled together. Perhaps. Don't thank me yet, Cody, Obi-Wan manages, although there is no one around to hear him. There was once a scholar, neither Jedi nor Sith, that believed love was a ladder. This scholar proclaimed that, at the most basic level, love was cultivated for an individual being. Whether that being was a friend, a lover, or a family member, the soul recognizes something beautiful in them and loves them for their beauty. But the scholar also believed that love is able to progress beyond this stage, allowing the individual to recognize that there is beauty in all things and love them, too. Perhaps attachment is not an anchor, but a ladder. Or perhaps attachment is not love at all. The Jedi are to love in moderation, never placing the good of the few over the good of the many. But perhaps this is a false choice. Perhaps the good of the few leads to the good of the many. Perhaps it is only through the love of a few that it is possible to recognize the humanity of the rest, to know that they, too, are just as deserving. Anakin, alongside a handful of troopers from the 501st, has already been called away, even before the recovery effort was truly begun. Something about a mission on personal request from the Supreme Chancellor. Most of the men, both 212th and 501st, who fought the previous day's battle on Kamino, chose to remain in Tipoca City rather than return to their ships for the night. Obi-Wan could hardly blame them. The attack on their home, for lack of a better word, has seen many of the men shaken, not just Cody. They've stayed to provide help through the long and grueling night, clearing away rubble, patching leaks, tending to the dead and injured. Obi-Wan runs into Chris and Longshot first. Ah, gentlemen, he calls, easily drawing their attention. Both members of Ghost are still in full armor. Chris is wearing thick gloves, wet with quick repair plaster all the way to his elbows. Longshot is attempting to direct his efforts while simultaneously holding the ladder steady. Have either of you seen Helix, by any chance? General, Chris greets. There's a stim patch adhered high on his neck, his pupils dilated in a manner that suggests he's been working far beyond his limit for quite a while now. Not sure. Best guess is that he's down in medical harassing the droids, he adds. What's wrong? Are you injured? Longshot frets. Oh no, nothing of the sort. I just need his help on a project. Chris, I could use your expertise as well. Sure thing, he acquiesces easily. His gloves, when he strips them into a nearby bucket, make a wet, sodden smack. What's the project, sir? I'm going to do something very ill-advised.
Chris snorts. What, more than usual?
General, are you sure you're okay?
Longshot asks.
Obi-Wan takes a brief moment to check in with his body. There are no new pains of any kind. Certainly nothing out of the ordinary after engaging both Grievous and Ventress. In fact, he feels significantly lighter, more energized. The twisting in his chest that has become a fixture throughout the war has all but vanished. I feel just fine, Longshot. I assure you, Helix already gave me a thorough going over after the fighting ended.
Obi-Wan gentles.
Sir, it's just... Well, your eyes are different, Longshot rebukes, still frowning in thought.
Obi-Wan blinks.
Yes, well, that could hardly be avoided. He just hadn't thought anyone, besides Shaak Ti, would even notice. But his men are always surprising him.
Come with me, he says. I'll explain once we have Helix. And Chris, tell your best slicers to be on standby.
They fall into step with him as he continues towards the medbay.
Chris asks, already rebucketing to use his inbuilt comms,
How many?
Obi-Wan hums,
All of them. Not all that dive from cliffs make a running head start. Sometimes the fall is only a natural progression. Sometimes it is done as easy as breathing.
The medbay is a site of controlled chaos. A handful of Kaminoans and droids mingle, passing back and forth between cots and performing all sorts of tasks. Helix, predictably, is found at the very heart of the mess, engaged in a fight with a rather opinionated MD droid. When he spots them, he waves them over, stripping his gloves as he goes. His standard gray scrubs are splattered with dark, dry blood.
General, are you dying? You never visit medical of your own volition, he teases.
But there's a real undercurrent of worry to his words. He's sporting dark, heavy, defined bags under his eyes, just like Chris and Longshot. Helix has most likely not slept since the 212th were called in.
No, nothing of the sort, Helix. I just need your assistance on a rather delicate matter,
Obi-Wan soothes, gently steering him away from the patients and into a relatively quiet bedspace. He draws the curtain after them, for all the good that will do.
What's going on? Helix demands, and after a beat, his eyes widen. Sir, your eyes!
And truly, Obi-Wan really hadn't known his men paid quite so much attention to the color of his eyes. It would be amusing if it weren't for the circumstances. I won't attempt to hide it from you all. He begins, heart hammering in his chest. For all that he knows this was his only option, he can still feel the shame of it keenly. I can no longer call myself a Jedi, he admits.
All three of his men rear back as if slapped.
What? Longshot hisses, voice low.
Truthfully, I'm not sure what I can call myself now. I'm hardly a Sith. He adds, because it feels particularly important to emphasize that much at least. Just as Jedi are not simply force sensitives, Sith are not simply dark side users. The Jedi are a religious order, a doctrine that one must opt into, just as much as the Sith are. No, Obi-Wan has only rearranged his priorities in such a manner that has allowed him to tap into his emotions. One could argue that doing such is an inherently dark side tactic. It certainly isn't very Jedi. Where the Jedi immerse themselves in the currents of the Force, learning to bend and move in the way that flows, what Obi-Wan has done is quite a lot like drowning. Except, the rush of water into his mouth and nose is all too welcome, for with it comes the power to act.
You what?
Helix echoes, disbelief written plainly on every line of his face. If you want no part of this, I will not force you, Obi-Wan stresses.
Please trust in that, if nothing else. And then, well, there's nothing for it. He must make some sort of attempt to explain the culmination of over a year's worth of denial and steadily building devotion. Tonight I have learned things about Camino that have fundamentally altered my perception of this war and my part in it. He forces himself to take a deep breath before moving on. I say this knowing fully that what I am suggesting is treason, and if your conscience calls on you to arrest me, I understand.
Sir, Chris whispers harshly, an aborted move toward him, all shock and dismay in the force.
I intend to take control of Camino, Obi-Wan declares. It is, in many cases, best to rip the plast off as quickly as possible. Longshot blinks. Chris snaps his mouth shut with an audible click. Obi-Wan can hardly blame them. These things take time to process, after all. It is Helix who recovers first. Medics are always a step ahead of the rest of them mere mortals.
Why?
He whispers. Although, if maintaining discretion was not a problem, Obi-Wan has the impression that he would be shouting, possibly shaking him by the shoulders violently, too. I learned about decommissioning, he says, frank, and watches the color drain from his men's faces. And I will not stand for it. This is not a popular opinion among Republic representatives, and I simply cannot entertain the trappings of politics where your lives are concerned. I will steal every last member of the Gar if I must, but I will not let another child fall. Obi-Wan laughs, rueful and short. I suppose this makes me a terrible Jedi, but I'm finding that I don't quite give a fuck. Silence rules in their tiny carved-out space, while the rest of the medbay buzzes on, unawares. My Batcher was decommissioned, Helix murmurs eventually. His eyes are fixed flat on the floor, his hands clenched tight enough at his sides that his knuckles have gone bone white. He didn't have a name yet. Neither did I. I don't even remember why he was taken. Only that he was and he never came back.
We thought the Jedi knew, Chris confesses, voice cracking, words nearly tripping over themselves in their haste to escape.
We thought... Obi-Wan, for the first time in a very long time, does not crush his instinct to draw one of his men in close. He folds Chris into his grasp, armor and all, and holds on, just as he had done for Waxer nearly a year ago. In a word, it feels right. He knows, by the way that Chris goes lax in his grip, breath trembling out of him, that it is. How could this choice have ever been wrong? No, my dear, I can assure you that I did not. Obi-Wan promises. He smooths down Chris's long hair, sticking every which way after the sweat of the earlier battle.
Is it even possible, Helix blurts, to take Camino?
All things are possible through the Force, Obi-Wan replies. He does not stop to think whether or not he maintains the right to use the old Jedi adage anymore. There are far more important things to devote his attention to. Within 3 hours, they have a plan. Obi-Wan calls an officers' meeting and allows Chris, Helix, and Longshot to coordinate other 212th members they believe would be assets to the discussion. The 501st are more of a risk, simply by virtue of the fact that Obi-Wan does not know them. All 53 chosen members of the 212th assemble on the bridge of the Negotiator. As it becomes necessary, more and more men are folded in. By the time Cody finds them, they've already gotten the ball rolling. Their meeting of 4, turned 53, turned nearly 80 by the final headcount, has only just started to disperse when he enters the bridge.
Sir, I received your transmission and came as soon as I could, Cody says. He casts a glance around the bridge.
Some of the men who don't know their commander as personally as others look wary, mistrustful. The Marshal Commander's reputation as... the hardest hard-ass in the galaxy precedes him.
It's quite all right, Obi-Wan soothes as best he can.
projecting his voice just a tad bit more than usual. It's happened enough times now that he's braced for it when it occurs. When Cody gets a glimpse at his eyes, he lurches forward, hands outstretched as if he might catch Obi-Wan. His immediate surge of concern is so strong, it's practically palpable in the Force. It tastes like blaster fire on Obi-Wan's tongue. "I'm all right, Cody," he adds, gentler, as his frantic commander reaches him. "What happened?" Cody hisses, voice dropped low so as not to be overheard. He's already trying to manhandle Obi-Wan towards an idling chair, no doubt intent on forcing him to rest and sicking no less than 3 medics on him. Obi-Wan loves him. He allows himself to hold on to the feeling rather than release it. Being ruled by one's emotions is said to be a great weakness. He finds that his love for Cody, for all of his men, only provides him with strength. With a signal to Helix, "All clear, proceed," he negotiates Cody over to the side, away from those that might overhear his reaction. Something deep in his gut prompts him to reach for Cody's hand, thinking only of the grief and forgiveness in his eyes hours ago. And he tells him. When he's finished, Cody only says one thing. The emotion in his voice is unchecked, enough to break Obi-Wan's heart if it hadn't already broken 1,000 times over. "Why?" "There are many reasons, my dear," he says. Every ounce of fondness he has for this man is all but leaking out of him at the seams. Obi-Wan has never been big enough to contain all of it. "You have a big heart," Shakti had said, but she hadn't really understood. His heart has never been big enough to contain all that he feels, and he's spent his whole life desperately trying to fit things bigger than himself into a space impossibly small. He finds it immensely freeing to no longer have to try. He feels lighter, steadier. Ironically, it is only now that he has fallen that he finds true balance. Obi-Wan cradles the side of Cody's neck in his hand, thumb tucked neatly under his jaw. Cody goes still all over at the contact. It is the most striking pleasure of Obi-Wan's life to hold him such. Even if what he feels for Cody goes no further than this, for as long as either of them may live, it would be enough. Holding him here, just like this, is enough. "But the most important reason is love," Obi-Wan confesses. "I have loved you for a very long time, Cody. I have been attached to you, to all of you, in ways unbecoming of a Jedi for just as long. And if I am not able to protect you and your brothers as a Jedi, then I find I don't particularly want to be one any longer." Cody's voice, when he speaks, is nothing more than a harsh rasp. "I can't ask this of you." "Oh, my love," Obi-Wan murmurs and brings his other hand up to join his first, cradling Cody's face between them like he's wanted to do 1,000 times before. There is no need to ask for something freely given. Cody makes a sound suspiciously like a sob and gasps, overwhelmed. "General," Obi-Wan clicks his tongue. "I think you'd really ought to start calling me Obi-Wan, considering I'm about to commit treason against the Republic. Not really general material, that." It has the desired effect of eliciting laughter from his dear commander, as shaky a thing as it is. They stand there, breathing together in the aftermath of it. It feels as though he is looking, truly looking at Cody for the very first time. A brilliant mind, a fierce devotion, a protective older brother, a wellspring of love, deep enough to drown in. He is the kind of beauty that consumes one utterly. He is the kind of beauty that one falls for. Somewhere off to the side, Boyle groans theatrically, Just kiss already, you carking idiots, he shouts, hands cupped around his mouth for maximum effect. The troopers that are still lingering erupt into giggles. Waxer turns and smacks Boyle upside the head, hissing something about taking the romance out of everything and ruining a perfectly good vibe, Decoot. But Obi-Wan isn't paying attention. He can't, really. Not when Cody surges forward and does such an admirable job of occupying every single iota of Obi-Wan's brain power with his warm lips, wet mouth, and clever tongue. When they break for air, unfortunate really, because Obi-Wan would like to continue kissing for the next 10,000 years, give or take. Cody's handsome face is ever so slightly darkened with a flush. And makes Obi-Wan's heart kick powerfully in his chest, beating like a war drum. They're still clinging to one another when he asks, breathless and a tiny bit awkward, "What's the plan, Obi-Wan?" He's all too happy to tell him.